Okay, think about this for a second. Before you've even maybe finished your first cup of coffee today, you've likely already come across engineered nanoparticles.
It sounds a bit sci-fi, doesn't it? But it's true.
Yeah, I mean, they could be in your toothpaste, maybe even your coffee creamer, the clothes you're wearing right now, definitely the phone or device you might be listening on.
Exactly. It's this whole unseen world, but it's having a huge impact woven into just so many parts of our daily routines.
So today, that's what we're diving into, this world of nanoparticles. What exactly are they? Where do we find them? What's their incredible potential? But also, what are the big questions starting to bubble up about their long-term effects, on us and the environment?
And just so we're all on the same page, when we say nanoparticles, we're talking incredibly small, measured in nanometers.
And that scale is hard to grasp, isn't it?
It really is. Picture a single human hair. It's tens of thousands of nanometers wide. So these particles, by definition, have to have at least one dimension that's smaller than 100 nanometers. Incredibly tiny. But here's the really fascinating part, the bit that often makes people go, aha. At that scale, the basic rules of physics and chemistry, they actually start to change.
How so?
Well, think about surface area. It increases dramatically compared to the particle's volume. Their electrical charges can behave differently, and they often become much more reactive. So their behavior down at the nanoscale can be totally different from the same material in a larger chunk.
So it's not just smaller, it's fundamentally different.
Exactly. Imagine shrinking a brick down to dust particle size, and suddenly it could fly or conduct electricity or even heal things. It's that kind of shift. Huge possibilities, but also, yeah, some uncharted risks we need to navigate.
Okay, so that's our mission for this deep dive then. We want to unpack all these layers for you. We'll look at why manufacturers are so interested in using them, how we're all being exposed, maybe in ways we don't even think about, what the latest research is telling us about what happens when they get inside our bodies.
And crucially,
And crucially, what you can actually do with this information, how to make informed choices.
yeah, it's all about finding that balance, isn't it? On one hand, you've got this amazing potential in medicine, industry, energy. Nanotechnology could really change things.
Revolutionize things, maybe?
Potentially. But on the other hand, we've got this uncharted territory regarding health, the environment. So our goal here is to get you up to speed, connect the dots, help you see this thing that's everywhere but often invisible, have those aha
All
moments.
right, let's start with the why. Why are manufacturers so drawn to these tiny, tiny particles? It must be those unique properties you mentioned.
That's exactly it. They're harnessing those altered nanoscale properties for very specific benefits. Take titanium dioxide and zinc oxide nanoparticles.
Right, sunscreens.
Widely used in sunscreens, cosmetics too. Because they're so small, they appear transparent on the skin, but they still give you really good UV protection.
So none of that thick, pasty white stuff from older sunscreens.
Precisely. It's not just about making the product slightly better. Sometimes it's about completely rethinking what a material can achieve, making it more effective or just more pleasant to use.
And it goes way beyond sunscreens, right? They're kind of creeping into
Oh,
everything.
absolutely. Silver nanoparticles are another big one. They're known for their antimicrobial properties.
So fighting germs.
Yep, you'll find them in textiles like workout clothes to reduce odor, in wound dressings to help prevent infection, sometimes even in kitchen stuff like cutting boards or containers. Then you've got carbon nanotubes, incredibly strong, great conductivity at that scale. They're popping up in electronics, making things lighter, stronger, more powerful.
And even food.
Even food. Silica nanoparticles are sometimes used in powdered food, spices, coffee creamers, that kind of thing, as an anti-caking agent. Just helps them pour smoothly. So the potential really is huge. Enhanced materials, better antimicrobials, even precision drug delivery. Imagine targeting cancer cells directly without hitting healthy ones. Or, materials that clean the air in your house. It's pretty amazing stuff.
But that amazing potential, it definitely comes with some pretty serious questions, especially when we start talking about how they interact with our biology. Because those same properties that make them useful, the tiny size, the huge surface area, the reactivity, that also means they might interact with our bodies in complex ways.
That's the core issue, and where a lot of the research is focused now. Lab studies, for example, have shown certain nanoparticles can actually get inside our cells. They can penetrate the cell membrane.
Which is usually a pretty strong barrier.
It is. And once inside, they've been seen interfering with things like mitochondrial function. That's the cell's energy source. They can even change how genes are expressed. And in some lab models, exposure has triggered things like oxidative stress, that's a damaging imbalance in the cell inflammation, and it can mess with normal immune responses too. These aren't just theories, we're seeing these cellular reactions in studies.
So if these particles are becoming so common and they can have these effects, how are we actually encountering them? What are the routes into our bodies?
Good question. There are basically four main pathways to think about. First, and probably the biggest risk, especially for people working with these materials, is inhalation.
Breathing them in.
Exactly. They're so small they can bypass the natural filters in your nose and throat. They can get deep down into the lungs, into the alveoli, those tiny air sacs, much deeper than regular dust.
And then
in some cases, they might even cross from the lungs into the bloodstream. That's the alveolar capillary barrier.
Mm-hmm.
So they could potentially circulate around the body. That's a major concern for occupational exposure.
Okay, so inhalation is key. But it's not just factory workers, presumably.
No, definitely not. The second pathway is ingestion, swallowing them.
How does that happen?
Could be through food additives, like that silica example. Or maybe nanoparticles migrating from packaging into food. Contaminated water is another possibility. And something people forget, if you inhale particles, your lungs have a mechanism to clear them upwards, and you might end up swallowing them anyway.
Ah, right. The mucociliary escalator.
That's the one. So it can be a bit of a double whammy. Inhale some, swallow some.
What about skin? Is that a route? I always thought skin was a pretty good barrier.
It generally is, especially intact, healthy skin. But dermal absorption is the third pathway. While most nanoparticles probably don't get through easily, some smaller ones, especially if they're in formulations with other ingredients designed to enhance penetration, like in some cosmetics might get into deeper skin layers.
And from there?
From there, they could potentially reach the lymphatic system, which is linked to your immune system. So the whole product formulation really matters, not just the nanoparticle itself.
Okay, that makes sense. And the last pathway, you mentioned four.
The fourth is injection. This is different because it's usually intentional. Think nano-formulated medicines or vaccines.
Ah, like targeted drug delivery.
Precisely. Here, nanoparticles are designed specifically to be put into the body, often to target certain cells or tissues, or maybe to boost the immune response for a vaccine. So the delivery is direct and hopefully controlled.
So whether it's intentional injection or accidental inhalation or ingestion, once these particles are inside us, what actually happens? Do they just pass through?
Well, that's the multi-million dollar question, really. It's complex. Once they're in, they start interacting with everything, proteins, immune cells, particularly macrophages.
The cleanup crew cells?
Kind of, yeah. Macrophages might engulf them. And then these cells can transport the nanoparticles through the lymphatic system or the bloodstream. They can end up accumulating in major organs, liver, spleen. Kidneys are common sites.
Accumulating, so they don't just get filtered out quickly.
Not always, no. Some seem to stick around. And what's quite concerning is some studies, mainly in animals so far, show certain nanoparticles can even reach the brain, possibly crossing the blood-brain barrier.
Wow.
And maybe even more worrying, other animal studies have found some nanoparticles can cross the placenta. That obviously raises huge questions about potential effects on fetal development. So it's not a simple in-and-out journey for many of them. They can travel and they can persist.
And we're starting to see evidence of this beyond just lab animals, right? Mm-hmm. You mentioned a 2022 mouse study.
Yes, that was a notable one. Mice given chronic low doses of titanium dioxide nanoparticles, the type used as a food additive, sometimes showed changes in their gut bacteria, their microbiome.
And that's important.
Hugely important. The gut microbiome affects everything from digestion to immunity. In that study, the changes were linked to low-grade intestinal inflammation. It points to these subtle long-term effects on gut health.
And in humans, have they found them accumulating?
There is evidence. Human tissue analyses have actually detected silver nanoparticles, for instance, in the liver and spleen of people. That strongly suggests they can build up over time with regular exposure. It confirms they aren't always just flushed out.
And going back to inhalation, those carbon nanotube studies sound pretty alarming.
They are concerning, yes. Studies looking at inhaled carbon nanotubes have shown they can persist in lung tissue for a long time, and they've caused fibrotic changes, basically scarring in animal lungs.
You mentioned an asbestos comparison earlier.
The pattern of fibrosis seen in some studies has been compared to the early stages of changes seen with asbestos exposure. Now, that doesn't mean they are asbestos, but it's a serious red flag that warrants much more investigation. There's also emerging evidence suggesting chronic nanoparticle exposure might worsen cardiovascular disease, possibly through inflammation and oxidative stress pathways systemically.
So the picture is, well, it's still developing, but there are definitely concerning signals there. But it's really important to stress the big unknown here, isn't it? Like, okay, maybe the tiny amount in my toothpaste today won't make me sick tomorrow.
Right. Acute toxicity from typical everyday environmental exposure seems unlikely based on current reviews. You're probably not going to have an immediate dramatic reaction.
But the real question, the one nobody has the answer to yet, is about the cumulative effect. Decades of low-level exposure to a whole mix of these things. What does that do?
Exactly. That's the crux of the uncertainty. The technology is relatively new in terms of widespread use. We simply haven't had the decades needed to do those long-term human studies properly. And that's why this is such a critical area for ongoing research. It's not just academically interesting. It directly affects potentially everyone's long-term health.
Which logically brings us to regulation.
Yeah.
How is all this being managed?
Yeah, it was a bit of a mess, frankly. The regulatory landscape is really inconsistent globally, and it often lags way behind the science and the product development.
So the rules aren't keeping up?
Not really. In many places, nanomaterials don't even have to be specifically identified on ingredient labels. So you, as a consumer, often have no way of knowing if they're in a product.
So much for informed choice.
Right. And the safety testing requirements are often much less strict than for something like a pharmaceutical. Even though these nanoparticles are designed to be biologically active and we use them constantly.
So a product might be fine in one country, but restricted in another.
Absolutely. It can feel a bit like the Wild West sometimes, where the innovation is just charging ahead of the safety and environmental frameworks. And ultimately, that leaves doctors and consumers kind of in the dark, unable to make fully informed risk-benefit judgments.
And this isn't just about us, is it? What about the environment when these things get out there?
That's the other huge piece of the puzzle. Environmental release is a major issue. Nanoparticles get shed all the time, from washing clothes with antimicrobial silver in them, for example. That goes straight down the drain. From products breaking down over time, think plastics or coatings. From manufacturing processes releasing waste.
And where do they end up?
They can build up in soil, in rivers, lakes, oceans, and then they can get taken up by plants, by fish, by microorganisms, basically entering the food chain.
So they cycle through the environment.
Yes. And studies have even shown things like insects picking them up from a contaminated area and carrying them elsewhere so they can spread. It's this slow, constant release into ecosystems, and we're really only just starting to figure out the long-term ecological consequences.
Okay, so given all this, the potential risks, the unknowns, the widespread use, the big question for anyone listening is probably, what can I actually do about this? It feels kind of overwhelming.
It can definitely feel that way. And the first thing is probably to address some things that don't work, despite claims you might see online.
Ah, yes, the quick fixes.
Exactly. You often hear about things like zeolite clay, activated charcoal, or various detox supplements being promoted as ways to bind or remove nanoparticles from your body.
Do they work?
There is simply no good independent clinical evidence to support those claims. No supplement or specific product has been proven in proper studies to effectively and safely bind and remove nanoparticles from the human body. So treat those claims with a lot of skepticism.
Right. So forget the magic bullets. What is supported by evidence?
Really, the bottom line, based on what we know now, is pretty straightforward. Prevention and reducing your exposure are the only strategies we can reliably recommend.
Meaning?
Meaning making active choices to use nanoparticle-free products whenever you have that option and it makes sense for you. Look at labels sometimes. They might say non-nano, or you might need to research specific ingredients if you're concerned.
Especially for things you use a lot or ingest.
Particularly for things like food, food packaging, and personal care products you apply daily. Until we have much better long-term safety data, just minimizing unnecessary exposure seems like the most sensible approach. Read ingredient lists, look for terms like nano, micronized sometimes, or specific names like nano silver or titanium dioxide, nano. Be a conscious consumer.
Okay, so avoidance is key. But what about dealing with potential exposure we can't avoid? Can we help our bodies handle it better? You said nothing binds them out, but can we support our natural systems?
That's a good distinction. While we don't have a specific nanoparticle binder, we can support the body's general natural detoxification and Clemens pathways.
How?
Think foundational health. Supporting your liver, which is a major detox organ. That means things like staying well hydrated, eating a balanced, nutrient-dense diet, and minimizing things that stress the liver, like excessive alcohol or unnecessary medications.
Basic healthy living, essentially.
Pretty much. Also, supporting your lymphatic system helps. That system is crucial for immune function and clearing waste. Regular movement, exercise that gets lymph flowing.
So, exercise helps with nanoparticle clearance.
It helps the systems that are involved in clearing all sorts of things, potentially including nanoparticles over time. But again, these are general health support measures. They aren't targeted nanoparticle removal protocols. We desperately need more research into how nanoparticles move in the body, how long they stay, and if there are safe ways to enhance their removal. The science just isn't there yet for specific interventions.
So it really boils down to reducing exposure where you can and supporting your overall health.
At this point in time, yes, that's the evidence-based approach. So wrapping this up, the central challenge here really is about balance, isn't it? We've got this incredible nanotechnology with immense potential for good in medicine, energy, material, science.
Game-changing potential.
Truly. But we have to weigh that against the unknowns, the potential unintended consequences for our health and for the environment. We need to make sure we fully understand those impacts before we go all in on deploying these technologies everywhere. It's a classic case of innovation needing to be paced by caution and thorough research.
And for professionals listening, doctors, scientists, public health folks, being aware of these exposure sources, the potential interactions, is becoming more and more relevant across the board.
Absolutely.
And for everyone else, for you listening, it really comes down to being informed, making conscious choices in a world that's increasingly filled with these invisible ingredients.
Well said. And maybe a final thought to leave you with. Until we have all the answers, which might be a long time, the best approach is probably to stay critical, stay informed, and just remember that even the tiniest changes down at that nanoscale can have ripple effects that go far beyond what we can immediately see. They're shaping our future in really profound ways.
A powerful thought to end on. Okay, next week, we're tackling another topic where science and ethics collide. We'll be doing a deep dive into gene-edited companion animals. What happens when advanced biotechnology moves right into our homes? Join us for that.